Hey there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 316. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line. Send an email on over to ken@thisshowisogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowisogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is thisshowisogay. And of course, go to the Facebook. Type in This Show Is So Gay. Like us, because we sure as heck like you. We have an amazing show for you this week. We must get started with our guest. Alina Troiano is better known as Carmelita Tropicana. She is a performance artist, a playwright, an actor, a change agent, and so much more. She burst onto New York's downtown performing arts scene in the 80s with her alter ego, the Spitfire, Carmelita Tropicana, and her counterpart, the irresistible Latin macho Pingolito Betancourt. And then she followed up with performances as Hernando Cortez's horse. That's right, Hernando Cortez's horse. She performed at the legendary WOW Cafe Theater, and now she performs extensively in spaces such as the Performance Space 122 and Dixon Place. Her performances, plays, and videos are legendary. They have been presented at venues such as the Institute of Contemporary Art in London, the Center de Cultura Contemporánea in Barcelona, the Berlin International Film Festival, the New Museum of Contemporary Art in New York, and so many more. Her work has received funding support from the Independent Television Service, the Jerome Foundation, and the Rockefeller Suitcase Fund. She has received just a ton of awards, including the prestigious Anonymous Was a Woman Award and fellowships from the New York Foundation for the Arts, as well as an Obie for sustained excellence in performance. She is performing with some pretty amazing folks as part of the Vermont Performance Labs Progressive Performance Festival. It's Friday, September 4th through Sunday, September 6th. It's all over my former home of Brattleboro, Vermont. Shout out Brattleboro. Tickets are available at vermontperformancelab.org/events. And holy cow, are you going to want to check her out? But first, Alina and Tropicana, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
I thank you, Ken, because I am so gay.
Look at that. It's like the perfect show for you.
Exactly.
Oh, I love it. All right, well, we're going to start out talking to Alina. We'll talk to Carmelita in a few minutes. Alina, is there a certain label that you gravitate towards more? I said performance artist, playwright, actor. Is there something that jumps out at you that you would say, this is who I am?
No, because it's all important, and right now in today's world, you have to do many things in order to survive. So, you know, we do not just do one thing, but we do many things, and I work in many genres and mediums. I mean, I love film because film, you know, you can do, and if you did it in the 90s, you look so good.
Yeah.
And if you do it now, you look good in a different way.
Nice.
In a more mature way. So it's one of those things that you have to be doing many different things. And I love it all. I mean, it's really good to be an actor, to be able to go between, you know, doing your own work and then, you know, being a thespian and even traveling in other people's work. So it's all really good.
Alina, I almost hesitate to ask this question because your projects have been so varied and so unbelievable over the years. But would you say that there is a narrative thread that connects all the different projects you have worked on?
Yes, I guess my concerns are always history and memory and who tells that history. So I look for a way of telling histories that are not in the mainstream. You know, sort of outsider histories that have not been written is what I like to call it. And I like to look at history from a different perspective. That's why one of my pieces was called The Conquest of Mexico as Seen Through the Eyes of Hernando Cortés's Horse.
Yes.
So it's a kind of like, you know, a witness to what was happening way back in colonial times. And it's a good way to kind of tell history through, you know, a witness that, you know, may be very different from a human witness.
What would you say that you want, no matter what the medium, what are you looking for audiences to walk away with?
I think that it's about asking questions and seeing other perspectives, you know, and a love of language, a love of culture. That's why, you know, I like to say that I am very good with a tongue. And that means that I pick up, you know, languages, you know, when I travel, and I incorporate them into the work itself. So language is also one of my concerns. And I like to do things with a sense of humor. It's a sense of humor that, you know, it's kind of like I was born in Cuba, and there's a kind of humor that's called choteo, which means putting down of authority figures. It's a kind of the street, you know, the little guy in the street, the popular, you know, sort of person, the hoi polloi. So that to me is kind of important, you know, because I like to sort of have discussions about race, ethnicity, you know, feminism in a very plural way, many feminisms. So that's to me, it's about social political content, but always having fun with it so that you can laugh in one eye and cry in the other.
So great. That's why we have two eyes, to do things like that.
Exactly.
Exactly. Now, I'm not sure if you have ever read Carmelita's manifesto, but right in there is a shout out to the ability of performance to change audiences' perceptions of the world, which is just, look, that's what we're all striving to do. Tell me about one of those times, Alina, that you walked away saying, you know what, I feel like I did that.
You know, it's hard. Sometimes you, as an artist, you write things, and then people will actually come after the show and talk to you. And I can see, when I first did a show called Milk of Amnesia, Leche de Amnesia, it's kind of like a story about me going back as Alina and Carmelita going back to try and figure out where her amnesia, you know, where, you know, to snap out of her amnesia.
Yeah.
I was having, as Alina, I was having cultural amnesia, and Carmelita was having a real amnesia where she would get possessed by these voices. Now, when I did that show, I started having, you know, different voices and more of a travelogue. And when I did it at the first workshop, this Chinese woman came, and because milk and food is very much a part of that show, she came to me and said at the end, "Oh my God, you really reminded me of when I came here and food, how when I first tasted American food." And I hadn't thought of that. I thought of myself, but I didn't think that a Chinese woman would also be relating to that. You know, it didn't, I mean, I can understand it, but, you know, it was really very gratifying that she said that to me. And then other people have said, "Oh my God, it's so great because you came out and, you know, I read your work, and that kind of gave me a sense that coming out was a good thing and that there's hope in the world." And it's like, "Oh my God, that I couldn't, you know, that's amazing. That's really great." And I did a show at the Brooklyn Museum, and when I do shows at different places, you have to play to different audiences. The Brooklyn Museum, it was in the middle of the afternoon, so I had to attract people that were, as a performer, I had to, you know, I had a very varied, you know, public. And at first, a couple came out and said, "Oh my God, you know, are you going to do things that are kind of weird because, you know, we have these two kids and, you know, we've seen your work and maybe it's not appropriate." I said, "Oh, no, it'll be appropriate." And I had some jokes that were double entendre that really, the eight-year-old kid did not understand. But, you know, the lesbian in the audience that was tattooed and pierced, she could understand it. And both laughed because I was dressed a certain way, I could react a certain way, I engaged the audience, I made them participate. And at the very end, I got an email from the kid's mother saying, like, "Oh my God, you know, my kid came in and he was 8 years old and said that I had just seen the most wonderful thing, that he had seen Carmelita Tropicana." See, getting an eight-year-old to like your work, that, to me, you know, that's precious.
And I have to tell you, I don't know if you know this, that eight-year-old was me. It was me.
Yes, that's it.
This is a whole, this is your life. It has now come full circle, and here we are. Oh, I love it. I love it.
You see, people want to, you know, on TV, they want to get the 18 to 35, but I you know, I'm into the 8-year-old.
Nice.
That's, you know, that's my age limit.
I love that that's your demographic. That's your market that you're going for.
Hey.
Well, we have to talk about doing some of this work in the 80s. You know, it's so great to have younger listeners to our show, and I love it. And that also puts the responsibility on us, after doing this for so many years, to make sure that we're highlighting, my gosh, there were different eras that we did this work. And I would imagine for you, doing performance work in the 80s in New York City had to have been such a unique time.
Yes, it was a very exciting time. Everything was happening. Also, it was in the very early 80s, you know, or the mid-80s. I mean, AIDS had not yet hit full-blown.
Yeah.
Because when AIDS hit, then it was like, oh, my God. It was just really a very difficult and sad and political time for everybody. But, you know, and actually it brought the communities, the lesbian and the gay community, very close because we had to take care of one another.
Yeah.
But, you know, in the 80s when I started at WOW, and the thing for me was that I've always loved theater because you can collaborate with people. Like, I collaborate with my sister, Ella Troiano, who was actually in the 80s doing a lot of queer work, even though, you know, she was doing lots of queer work, and she was even called the goddess, the lesbian goddess by the Village Voice. So I was really upset because, my God, what was I? Well, I was the Miss Lower East Side Beauty Queen.
Nice.
Yes. And, you know, it was a very fun show, the Lower East Side Beauty, you know, beauty pageant. I had to bribe my judges, but, you know, it's a good thing to bribe them if you get the crown.
Indeed.
So it was a time when there was a lot of cross-pollination. People that, you know, were performing. Also, it was very much of a downtown scene. Everything was happening within a local area, whereas now everything's spread out. There are things happening in Manhattan and in Queens and in Brooklyn and the Bronx, you know, and all over the, you know, in New York. But back then it was really concentrated in the downtown. That's why it was called the downtown scene. And it was avant-garde. It was experimental. It was fun. It was cabaret. And you can go and perform in three different places at the same time. It wasn't precious kind of work. It was like, you know, throw it up, some of it sticks and it's great, and some of it is a, you know, like, you know, it's a bomb. But what was really important was that it was being done. There was an energy, an excitement, and it was very not mainstream, because at the time, this was when I started out, it was pre-Ellen, pre the L Word, pre Orange Is the New Black. I mean, we were doing it while work that was not being seen, and we attracted the attention of the academics, so they started writing about our work, and that's how we sort of started getting traction, because once people write about you, about your work, and they hire you to do work in the universities and otherwise, other theaters, you know, that's when, you know, you grow as an artist. So those were really important times. At WOW, I was very lucky that I met Split Bridges, Peggy and Lois, and Deb Margolin, who had done a show called Peggy Shaw, Lois Weaver, Deb Margolin, they'd done a show called Split Bridges. And that was a key to, you know, like, oh, my God, this is an amazing show. It's about three women. It's almost like the lesbian Waiting for Godot. Three
nice.
Women on stage. Very little happens, but so much happens. And these women were so captivating, so thrilling, and it was so funny, and also really, like, it hit you in the gut. I mean, it was really fantastic. So I thought, oh my God, if the WOW Cafe starts a cafe, I'm going, you know, I just have to be a part of it. And there also I met Holly Hughes, who is one of the NEA, the National Endowment for the Arts artists, who was defunded because her work was of the lesbian genre. That's
yes.
what they called it. And so she was one, and the five lesbian brothers, one of who is Peggy Healy,
yeah.
and Babs Davey, and Mo Angelis, Dominique DeBell, and Lisa Crone. And Lisa Crone has just won the Tony Award. She was in my first show ever at WOW, which is called Memories of the Revolution. And I had all these women from WOW, because that's the people that I knew, all these lesbians. And it was a show set in Cuba. So all these women that I got from WOW had the weirdest, you know, all their accents were more Polish, some were German, some were, you know, but it didn't matter because they were doing the show and they were hysterically funny. They were just really wonderful actors and singers. And Lisa Crohn at that time played Concita, Charo Concita, Charo Concita. So it was she was hysterically funny. And it was important to kind of mix up, you know, my world with their world. And it was really, it was a time that was really quite amazing. Just now at the Whitney Museum, I did a show that Dance Noise, Lucy Sexton and Annie Yost just finished doing a kind of retrospective at the Whitney of their work. And they had one show called the King Tut's Wawa Hut, because they used to run at a cabaret on Wednesday nights in the Lower East Side in a tiny little space, a cabaret show. And I was one of the, you know, their performers at the time that went all the time, you know, to do shows there. And it was just really amazing to do a retrospective of their work and be part of that scene. So it wasn't just WOW, but it was many other spaces, venues, like King Tut's Wawa Hut,
yeah,
like Performance Space 122 at the time was doing amazing work that was experimental, and they had dancers, and I was part of, like, other shows that had dancing, and even though I was not a good dancer, you know, I was being used for my ability to move like no one else. So those were really exciting times. Because also artists didn't have to have three or four jobs, you know, and rents were really ridiculous. What you would pay now for the rent was ridiculous.
Yeah.
So, you know, that afforded people the ability to have leisure time to do work. Whereas now I feel, you know, kind of sad that the world is not that way now. But we, you know, there were things back then that were struggles, whereas now you have less of a struggle in certain ways. It's a different world, so you have to adapt to whatever it is that you're being given, you know.
It doesn't make for necessarily good radio. I cannot express to you how I'm just sitting here in a daze listening to you, because just talking about Holly Hughes and the five lesbian brothers, and listeners, if you don't know who these folks are, these are heroes of performance art. And so, you know, you've worked with all these folks and you put such amazing content out there. This is a treat for me, Alina. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, thank you, Ken. That's fantastic.
Now, before we bring Carmelita on the show, and it's not that I'm nervous, I'm a little nervous, but how would you describe Carmelita to our listening audience?
Ay, Carmelita, she is, in the 80s, I was told that I was a spitfire, a great improviser, a hostess to the Havana Bacchanal, and I was the Carmen Miranda cloaked in dangerous fruits.
Wow.
You know, so the fruits were part of it, but they were dangerous fruits. And so that's what somebody said about the work. And I thought, and they also called me what now, you know, you kind of would go like, ooh, maybe that's not, you know, that's a strange thing to say. But I was called the cultural terrorist. I was a cultural terrorist because I was doing drag. I was doing, at the time that, you know, people weren't doing as much of that. Well, there was a lot of sexual work going on at that time.
Yeah.
As there is now. There's amazing, fabulous burlesque. But burlesque that is not just burlesque, but it's really intelligent and thoughtful burlesque. Is that, you know, I mean, the two don't seem to go together, but they really do go together really well. And political kind of burlesque that's happening now with a lot of people that I know. But we were doing also sexual work. In other words, we were the bad girls. When we first started out, WOW, it was the feminists would, you know, not want to do certain things, and there were women against pornography, and, you know, and we were embracing, you know, a lot of sexual work, and we were having fun with it. We were, and that was not what some lesbians wanted to see. In fact, when I first started doing Carmelita, even, you know, when I did her and my accent and wore the fruits, people were upset about it. People were like, oh, my God, she's making fun of Latinas. You know, she's using the stereotype. Yes, I was using the stereotype to go beyond the stereotype, to just sort of see that you know, it was to kind of question what, you know, what the stereotype was of the Latina. So, but I had a lot of people that just did not like that. In fact, I was, you know, there was a woman that I was seeing who I had seen, I'd gone to bed with, maybe I shouldn't say this, but should I stop now?
You know, you're doing fine.
Okay, well, I got to bed with her, and then she told me, you know, I really, I've never seen your work because I'm a little afraid, because I know that, you know, I'm not sure what you're, because she was very political. She was really big in politics, and she then went to see a show that I had at the Decade Show, which was a show put together, which was a retrospective of identity politics and multiculturalism, which was happening at the time in the 1980s. So it was an identity politics put together by the new museum of Hispanic Art and the Studio Museum of Harlem. So these three museums put together this huge retrospective, which was absolutely wonderful. And I mean, the night that I performed, Wojnarowicz was performing after me. So
wow.
It was just an amazing, amazing time. And this woman came to see the show, and then she was like, "Oh my God, now I get what you're doing. Now I get it." Because it's a little complicated. I've been very lucky that I work with my sister Ella Troiano, and also another collaborator, Uzi Parnes. They're both very visual. And what they wanted me to do is have the visuals and the words that sometimes didn't go together. So people would see me at the time. Now it's, you know, you have to play always. I always like to say that Carmelita is topical and tropical. And at that time in the 80s, fruits were considered like, oh my God, she's making fun of, she's using the stereotype of a Latina, Gucci Gucci Mama. And when I came out with the fruits, people, you know, were taken aback. But then if you heard me talking, I'd be talking about gentrification.
Yeah.
I'd be talking about performance art. I'd be talking about lesbians. So none of that. I mean, where is that, the stereotype of a Latina, a lesbian that talks about gentrification and performance art? I really don't think so.
No.
So what I was given them in terms of the outfit, which was a Coochie Coochie Mama, and I've always loved to have outfits, and I've been very lucky because I work with people that are both writers, and they're also visual artists that can dress me. You know, and that was part of the persona. The persona had to wear those things in order to kind of tell a different story and to make people kind of think, well, wait a second, what is she doing? But I don't get it. And that to me is really great. When you're putting two things together that somehow doesn't seem like to go together, but it kind of does. And I performed a lot for even politicians. I did this show for David Dinkins, who was, you know, the first black mayor of New York. And when I did the show for him, I you know, put together a poem that I wrote for him. And then I kind of said to him, you know, oh my God, because he was trying to woo the Latino vote. And I said, like, oh my God, when I look into your beautiful green eyes, I forget I'm a lesbian. And he looked at me and said, really, you think? You know, it was really great. Yes, of course. You know, I will flirt with anybody that will, you know, so it's those kinds of things that people, you know, had problems with before. And also, you know, sometimes people have problems with the fact that it's humor. And now not so much, because people, I think, are more in this culture attuned to humor being political and being, you know, being used very much. But back then, it was like in the arts, it was like if you were funny, it wasn't serious.
Yeah.
And my comedy is kind of serious. You know, it just doesn't, just because it's comedy, it doesn't mean that it doesn't have worth or it doesn't have heft.
Right. So. Well, last question for you before we welcome Carmelita on. You said at one point, this is such a beautiful quote, you said this about Carmelita. You said, quote, "I couldn't stand in front of an audience where sequin gowns tell jokes, but Carmelita could. She who penciled in her beauty mark, she who was baptized in the fountain of America's most popular orange juice in the name of Havana's legendary nightclub, the Tropicana. She was a fruit and wasn't afraid to admit it. She was the past I'd left behind. She was Cuba." It's such a beautiful quote. How would you say that Carmelita changed Alina?
Oh, my God. I got a voice. I wouldn't have, you know, been able to speak. I mean, I was able to come out, which is like, oh, my God. I was out. I was, you know, it gave me confidence. It gave me a sense of being a part of a larger world. When I went to WOW, I felt like I had found my tribe.
Yeah.
A lesbian tribe. All of a sudden, it was a part of something larger than you yourself, and a camaraderie. It just gave you such a wonderful feeling to be, not to be alone, not to be, you know, the one lesbian, you know, not knowing, or am I a lesbian? Am I not? What does it mean? And yet, you had all these people who were your friends who supported you, and you were part of a larger world, and you were really trying to create a, you know, representation for lesbians that didn't exist at the time. And we thought, you know, we were making our world as we went along. It was like we were making it up. And that was a very exciting time. It was a really sweet time. It was a time when, you know, I thought like, oh my God, this is, you know, I'm having the time of my life.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful. All right. Alina, we love you, but if you can perhaps step aside for a second, we would love to talk to Carmelita Tropicana.
I can finally. How long I've been waiting for you, babe. I mean, come on.
Carmelita, what an absolute treat to have you on the show. Do you have some time? We have some questions for you.
Oh, my God. I can't wait. Even if you don't have questions, I'll just talk. Question, big boy. What you look like? I bet you are handsome. Are you like Ken and Barbie?
I think maybe I will take control and ask some questions. I have to ask you, Carmelita, where does Carmelita Tropicana find humor? Where do you find the funny?
Oh my God, I find it wherever I can get it.
Yeah.
You know, I go outside in the street and, you know, I just pick it up. Oh, but you know what else? My mother is a very funny woman. So whenever she talks to me, I pick it up right away. She gives me a lot of great ideas. When I was trying to figure out, you know, what to do, what show to do in 1997, and I think, oh my God, what am I going to do? And then Dixon Place calls me up and says, look, we're going to give you a commission to do a show, but it's got to be a comedy. I go, okay. And at that time, you know, Dolly, had been cloned, you know, that sheep.
Yes.
Had been cloned.
Yes.
So I thought to myself, Dolly, the cloned sheep. Yes, I'm going to do something about cloning. It's going to be sci-fi. Sci-fi 1997. What can I call it? Chicas 2000, because 2000 seems so far away.
Yes.
So I do that, and I start to call my mother, and I call my mother, and I go, I'm doing a show. It's about cloning. And, you know, isn't it exciting that now they have cloning of the sheep? And she goes, oh, my God, no, that is horrible. Imagine if they put the heart of a bear inside somebody's, you know, somebody who's a human. Maybe they'll fall in love, a human with a bear. No, no, no. And I thought, a human with a bear falling in love. I love it. So I got that idea, and I created the hybrid, you know, a woman bear, you know, for my next show. So you see, my mother, she's very good at that. And then another time she tells me that there's a man in her office whose name is Pingalito Betancourt.
Yes.
Pingalito, I start to laugh because you know what that means in Spanish? Little penis. And I thought, oh my God, that is a great name. I know what that guy is like. He smokes a cigar. He has a fedora. His eyeglasses are broken because he just got into an accident. You know, it's wonderful. I love it. I love it.
What I thought I would do with you is play a little word association game. I was going to throw...
Go for it.
Okay, I'm going to throw some words out
Sex.
At you. And
Sex.
That wasn't even one of the words. I'm gonna add it in. Hold on. Let me update my list. Okay, I'm going to throw a couple words out at you, and you just give me the first sentence that comes to mind. I certainly am not even going to attempt to limit you to one word. I don't think that would work. So, one sentence that comes to mind. Are you ready?
Ready.
Okay. Gender.
Gender. There's so much gender. I want more and more of it.
There you go.
I have many genders, and now I want more.
Okay. Okay, now this word was suggested just a few seconds ago, and I've updated my list. Here's your next word, sex.
Sex. Well, sex is something that is sacred. Sacred. Like any sprinkle, I believe in the goddess of sex, and that's very important. You know, you cannot, it's not the only thing, but it is indeed a very good thing.
Nice. Perfect. Okay. Cuba.
Cuba, my land. My land that is, was, and may be in the future.
Nice. Nice. Oh my gosh, this is so lovely. What about change?
Change. Always. No matter what you do today, right now, this moment is changing. And we got to go with the change. You got to go with the flow. We got to figure out how we fit. How we are the agents of change.
I would imagine, and by the way, you won the game. You did very well there, Carmelita. I was not worried.
I wanted to use Kunst and never came up. The German word Kunst. Because I believe in the Kunst.
I know you do.
It's very important, actually. You know, I was just in Montreal last year, and I heard when you said sex, I wanted to say... there was a gentleman who is called Thompson Highway,
okay.
Who is an amazing Canadian, native Canadian, who gave a plenary speech, and it was amazing because this is part of, you know, of the native tradition, of the Cree native tradition, where they believe that there are three organs that are sacred. And the three organs that are sacred, you know what they are? That have a soul, a soul. You know, the soul in three sexes, you know, three organ parts. You know what they are?
Tell me.
The womb, okay?
Okay.
When you get born, the woman's genitalia.
Okay.
Okay? And last but not least, the ass. The ass has a soul. So every time you sit down, think, my soul is sitting down.
Oh.
And this is true, by the way. This is not, you know, sometimes people think, oh, I'm making stuff up. Uh-uh. It's all true.
I feel like that's going to change how I think about sitting down.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. Well, as I mentioned in the intro, you are headed to Vermont. Are you excited?
Oh, my God. I love Vermont. Every time I go, I just, you know, it's just amazing.
Everybody needs to head on over to vermontperformancelab.org/events, and they can pick up tickets for the Vermont Performance Lab's Progressive Performance Festival. It's extraordinarily affordable. What can you tell our listening audience? What would they see if they picked up tickets? Or I should say, when they pick up tickets.
Oh, when they pick up tickets. Oh, my God. They're going to see two people on stage, or maybe three, but two. Definitely two. Erin Markey. And myself, Carmelita, you know, in a performance that will be unforgettable. It's going to be about the future. There will be, perhaps, audience participation. And there's going to be live filming. So it's going to be a multimedia kind of extravaganza. There will be song, and there will be maybe a little dance.
Wow.
But it's all in the future. It is sci-fi, and it's going to be directed by Ella Torriano. And the wonderful Sarah Coffey at Vermont Performance Lab has been so wonderful in terms of putting us together and having us develop the work. And I think it's something that they're going to enjoy because we are going to be telling them how big a hyena is, certain parts.
Okay.
The certain parts that are, you know, hyena are very long.
I did not know that. Mm-hmm. Okay. I have to do a shout out. I have to pause right here because we don't often have the opportunity to talk about the behind the scenes folks who are creating such or who are enabling the creation of such amazing work. And Sarah Coffey is one of my favorite people on this planet, without question, one of my favorite redheads on this planet. And there are these incredible folks out there who are enabling the creation of just beautiful, thought-provoking work.
Yes.
So
I think Sarah Coffey, meeting her was one of the best things that happened in my life.
Oh, wow.
And for other artists, too. It's not that she is the best supporter of artists I have ever known.
Look at that.
Really, truly.
Look at that. Now, I have to be fair, because we asked Alina Troiano this. We asked her to describe you. I feel it would only be fair to ask you, Carmelita Tropicana, how would you describe Alina Troiano?
Well, what can I say? You know, she's part of me. You put up with her, you know. I put up with her, but, you know, she's shy. She's always thinking. You know, I have to do it for her all the time.
Nice.
As a matter of fact, one time I was in bed with a girl, and you know what the girl screamed? Carmelita, in the moment of ecstasy, okay? So that goes to show you how I feel about the other one. She's shy, she's, you know, a thinker, but not as much of a doer.
Oh, well, we loved talking to her. Now, last question for you, Carmelita. We have so many listeners out there who are just always, and not just our listeners, I'm sure I've engaged in this process, and I would imagine you have as well, and certainly Alina, this process of finding our voice. And it strikes me that you have such a distinctive voice that you put out there to audiences all around the world. What advice do you have for our listeners on how they should go about finding their voice and putting their voice out there?
I think, you know, you have to be in the world. There is a lot of noise right now.
Yeah.
There's a lot of really great information, but sometimes information doesn't mean wisdom. So sometimes you have to take that information, sit with it in a quiet place, meditate on it so that you can figure out, you know, where you want to go and who you are. Keep a journal. You know, see really great work that is inspiring. Think of people that inspire you. So, you know, you can have hope in the world. Because what is really important, you know, we're going to have a lot of climate change. We're going to have a lot of struggles, even with money, with food. All that stuff is not going to go away. But we have to somehow have a more communal spirit. You know, sit in your room, think, and also try to figure out how to involve your own voice with other people. I love young people. That's why I'm working now with Erin Markey, who's a young, you know, amazing actor. I'm also working with another person called Brandon Jacobs Jenkins, who is an amazing playwright who is African-American, who just hit 30. So I love working with young people because that gives me hope. We're going to be, you know, combining our efforts together. I think it's about trying to think of how to be more communal. A communal spirit is really important. And learning from youth is really important. And I hope to somehow inspire them also. Oh. So that is a give and take. You know, there's a teacher, the best teachers that I know are the teachers that learn from their students.
Beautiful stuff. Oh, I love it. All right. Listeners, here are all the different things that I need you to go do, and Carmelita needs you to go do them as well. First, again, stroll on over. If you are in that tri-state area in Brattleboro, Vermont, folks, if you have not been there, I lived there for 6 years. It's such a wonderful place to walk around and so accessible to so many different states over there. So stroll on over to vermontperformancelab.org/events, and you can pick up tickets for the Vermont Performance Lab's Progressive Performance Festival. It's Friday, September 4th through Sunday, September 6th, and you're going to see just some incredible work. So I highly encourage you to do that. And of course, you need to stroll on over to CarmelitaTropicana.com. We're going to link to that because I have to tell you, Carmelita, and please convey this to Alina as well, you are the embodiment of expressing your voice in a unique way, to engage with audiences, to get them thinking, certainly to entertain them. And I have to steal a quote from Alina, to have, you know, one of your eyes laughing and the other one crying. It's such a beautiful thing that both of you do, and I just look forward to so much more from you.
Oh, my goodness, Ken. You know, my goodness, that is so, I am honored, super honored to be with you.
Well, an absolute treat having you on the show. Carmelita, please convey our best to Alina and all the best for all of your work in Vermont and in Montreal and just all over the place.
Okay, thank you, Ken, so much. Super gracias. Ha sido un placer hablar contigo.
I am just a sailor in a great big sea, searching for what's meant for me. My lucky stars every single day. I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be. When the storm begins to blow, and when I've lost my way back home, oh, there is an answer.
Oh, all right, folks, and we are back. Alina Troiano, Carmelita Trapicana. These are legends, legendary names in performance art. I just, to hear her talk about Holly Hughes and the Five Lesbian Brothers and folks that I studied at NYU, what a treat, what a treat. Please know how appreciative I am of this opportunity to do this show. I cannot believe the folks that I get to speak to. And I can't believe that you guys listen, which I just adore. And hey, as long as you're listening, how about we catch you up on some of this week's most exciting LGBT news? It was all about the Boy Scouts this week. We knew it was going to happen, and indeed it happened. The Boy Scouts of America this week ended their ban on openly gay adult leaders. The new policy does have a bit of a loophole for church-sponsored units. It allows church-sponsored units to choose local unit leaders who share their precepts, even if that means restricting such positions to heterosexual men. Despite this compromise, the Mormon Church said it might leave the organization anyway. Its stance surprised many and raised questions about whether other conservative sponsors, including the Roman Catholic Church, might follow suit. A statement issued by the church said this, quote, "The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is deeply troubled by today's vote. When the leadership of the church resumes its regular schedule of meetings in August, the century-long association with scouting will need to be examined," end quote. So yeah, the Mormon Church not happy about this at all. At all. The top Boy Scouts leaders, including Robert M. Gates, the current president, and, you know, the former U.S. Secretary of Defense, who pushed for the new policy, they did not immediately respond to the Mormon Declaration. In previous statements, Mr. Gates expressed the hope that with the exemption for religious groups, the Boy Scouts might avoid a devastating splintering. So perhaps a big splintering within the Boy Scouts. We will most certainly keep our eyes on that, but a huge victory. It's not just the unequivocal 100% yes, this is great across the board, because there is a bit of a loophole, but for the Boy Scouts, who even just last year were making statements about how dug in the trenches they were about not allowing openly gay leaders in the Boy Scouts, this is a huge deal. It's a huge deal, huge step forward. So very exciting news there with the Boy Scouts. We will see if the Mormons stay with them, and perhaps if other groups leave as well. So yeah, there is a new documentary out, and I tell you this so that if it is in your area, I urge you to go see it. It's called Do I Sound Gay? And it's all about, hey, what do gay people even sound like? Is there such a thing as a gay way of speaking? The filmmaker David Thorpe uses his feelings about his voice to look at attitudes towards homosexuality. It raises a complicated discussion about gay pride, lingering homophobia, disguised misogyny, and the extent to which we all alter the image that we present to the world. Again, it is called Do I Sound Gay? And if this documentary is playing near you, I urge you to go see it. It sounds amazing. I'm going to go find it somewhere here in Cleveland. I also want to give another shout out. I feel like I'm supporting all of these folks who really don't need my help because they have PR teams, but I'm giving a shout out to A Great Big World. And if you've listened to the show, you know I love A Great Big World. If the only thing you know about the band A Great Big World is that one really depressing song with Christina Aguilera, Say Something, I'm telling you, you need to hear the rest of their album because there is so much else going on in their repertoire. It's actually a really fun group with really positive songs that make you question things in a really beautiful and upbeat way. And of course, I should say, this Grammy-winning band, their first ever radio appearance, the first radio appearance they ever did, was right here on this show, So Gay. Well, A Great Big World has this new song called Hold Each Other, and I just checked it out, and it is just the first song in my memory where a band with this prominence, and this is a Grammy-winning band. Their song with Christina Aguilera just sold millions and millions, downloaded millions and millions of times. And this new song, Hold Each Other, by this very prominent band, features a verse by Chad, who is one half of A Great Big World. Chad sings his verse to another man. And it's not done for sensationalistic purposes. It's not done just to get more downloads. Chad has since come out. In fact, he wasn't out when they were on the show a few years ago. He has since come out and he normalizes this verse. And he sings his verse in the same way that the other half of A Great Big World, Ian, sings it. And Ian sings his to a woman. And it's just beautiful. I don't know. It's just normalized in this way that I don't feel like I've heard before in another song that's not done in a sensationalistic way to get people to download it more. So I'm giving a shout out to A Great Big World. Their new song, Hold Each Other, really beautiful. Really beautiful stuff out there. So very exciting. Very exciting. Hey, Congress. How about Congress? Let's talk about the U.S. Congress. Members of the U.S. Congress signed a letter this week to Secretary of State John Kerry urging the State Department to deny visas to the spouses of diplomats from countries with anti-gay policies. Very interesting. This was in retaliation for what the lawmakers claimed was action by foreign governments to deny American diplomats who have same-sex spouses an equal opportunity to represent the United States abroad because certain foreign governments refuse to recognize their same-sex marriages. The letter was drafted by Representative Elliot Engel and Representative Nita Lowey. By the way, Nita Lowey, she used to be my representative when I lived in Westchester for 4 years. Love Nita Lowey. They are both ranking members of the House Committee on Foreign Affairs. They're both from the New York City area, and this letter was signed by 125 of their colleagues in the House. All but one are Democrats. The only Republican was Representative Ileana Rose-Lightnin of Florida, and the letter said this, quote, "We cannot look the other way when an American diplomatic spouse, any American diplomatic spouse, is discriminated against in this way. If a foreign government refuses to issue the appropriate visa to same-sex spouses, we ask that the State Department reciprocate by denying a visa to the spouse of a diplomat from that country," end quote. I don't know. I like the idea behind this. It feels a little bit petty. It feels a little bit petty. Like, all right, well then we're going to take our ball and we're leaving the sandbox and we're going home. It just doesn't feel like the most mature response, especially if we're trying to affect worldwide change. I don't think that any country with anti-gay policies is going to reconsider their policy, which I would assume is our goal, right? We want countries to be less anti-gay. Well, I don't think any country is going to revisit their anti-gay policies and really look at them and maybe get rid of them because the United States is denying visas to their spouses of diplomats from those anti-gay countries. I just don't think it's really going to do that. So I don't know. Seems a little silly. Seems a little silly to me. In the world of bodybuilding, I don't know that we've talked about this in a while, except when Adam Ragusa was on the show from NPR down in Atlanta. Well, step aside Caitlyn Jenner, that's what The Advocate says. Another athlete known to the public as one of the world's strongest men has come out as transgender. Jhené Marie Kroc, the world record-holding bodybuilding star and record-smashing powerlifter, whose website promises to help others get as big and as strong as inhumanly possible. Well, she announced her transition online via social media. She was formerly known as Matt Kroc. Sid Ziegler at Outsports confirmed that Kroc is now describing herself as both trans and gender fluid, and according to the report, living in both genders. So huge kudos to Jhené Marie Kroc, a world record-holding bodybuilding star and a record-smashing powerlifter, who has just come out to the world as transgender. Love it. Absolutely love that. Now, on the faith-based front, this is a really interesting one. LGBT groups and supporters, they've now, everybody's sending letters this week. Apparently, that's what we're doing this week. We are sending letters. Well, LGBT groups and supporters have sent Pope Francis a letter requesting a meeting when he is in the U.S. in September. If you didn't hear, Pope Francis coming to the U.S. in September, go see him. write him a letter. Well, these LGBT groups and supporters, they want to meet with him. They said there is a compelling pastoral need for such a meeting, which would promote great healing and reconciliation. The letter says this, quote, "We see so many people we love abandoning the church because of the kinds of indignities and pain that they're being subjected to, whether it's being denied a kid's baptism or hearing a priest make horrible comments during a homily. Everybody's got stories of pain and alienation, and those things do real harm to people, and it needs to end." The letter was dated June 25th. It went out under the auspices of Dignity USA, which is a group that promotes LGBT equality within the Roman Catholic Church, and GLAAD, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation. It's endorsed by numerous other organizations, including the LGBT Catholic group New Ways Ministry, other progressive Catholic groups, the Human Rights Campaign, and Latino organizations, plus several prominent individuals. Some more letters. Guys, you can go write letters. You could get a meeting with the Pope. Write your letter. Write it right now. And then there's Missouri. So my sister lives in Missouri. St. Louis seems like a really cool place. Shout out to my sister, Steffi. Hi, Steffi. Well, in Missouri, we have a gubernatorial race coming up. And one of the candidates is Senator Bob Dixon. Well, Missouri State Senator Bob Dixon, he's running for governor, and he claims, oh boy, that childhood abuse and teenage confusion caused him to be gay, but only for a few years. Senator Dixon's campaign issued a statement this Monday touting his faith in God and support for traditional marriage while condemning any opponents who try to use his past against him. It's a little bit of a preemptive strike here. He said this quote through his statement, "Through the years, I have publicly spoken about being abused as a child and the confusion this caused me as a teenager. There are literally thousands of Missourians who will understand how heartbreaking childhood abuse can be, though few might be willing to acknowledge it. I have put the childhood abuse and the teenage confusion behind me. What others intended for harm has resulted in untold good. I have overcome and will not allow evil to win." By the way, this is a statement for someone who wants to be governor. It sounds like he's running really for the crucible, or he's running to win all of the knights of the round table. It's a little nutty. But the quote goes on, quote, "There are people who to this day try to turn politics into a blood sport." Yeah, by the way, that would be your fellow Republicans as well, Senator Dixon. But I will continue with your statement. Quote, "This sort of approach discourages many good people from public service. While it is disappointing, I will have no fear of those who wish to tear down others for their gain. I will have no part of it." End quote. Senator Dixon and his mother, former Republican State Representative Jean Dixon, pretty famous representative there, they have both used his ex-gay claims before in political arena. Dixon's mother adamantly opposed the staging of the Normal Heart at Missouri State University in 1989. It was a big deal then. And she told Missouri's Springfield News Leader in 1992 that her son's homosexuality upset her and spurred her protest of the play. As for State Senator Dixon himself, in May of 1991, he spoke before the Springfield City Council to oppose a hate crimes ordinance. Records from the meeting 24 years ago do not reveal exactly what Dixon said to the committee, but that 1992 newspaper report records that he told the counselors he was gay in his teenage years until a religious conversion. He also told them that he planned to get married. Dixon was 22 at the time. So this is Missouri State Senator Bob Dixon. Stephanie Levinson, my sister, don't vote for him. I'm just using this platform to make a political statement, which I really shouldn't be doing. Sorry. Folks, vote for whoever you want. Let me just say this, that Missouri State Senator Bob Dixon can do a lot of harm. He can do a lot of harm as he promotes anything that's ex-gay, as he promotes this idea that people through religious life can convert. It actually can do quite a bit of damage, especially for parents who are grasping at any way to make their sons and daughters someone who they can be more comfortable with. And if they hear, oh, maybe religion will do it, well, that's completely corrupting the role of faith, corrupting the role of spirituality, corrupting the role of religion. Not in a supportive way. They're going to use it to tear down their children. So we'll keep our eyes on State Senator Bob Dixon, but not a story I like. Not a story I like at all. Let me also put out one more thing. Again, I'm endorsing all these different things, but I've heard good things about it. Even though TLC, the network, doesn't have, you know, What Not to Wear on it anymore. They don't have Trading Spaces While You Were Out, the heyday of fun programming on TLC. Now they have really sensationalistic programming. But Jazz Jennings has her own show. Jazz Jennings doesn't want to be labeled the transgender girl. She wants to be called Jazz, the girl who just happens to be transgender. The meteoric rise of trans people in mainstream media has been dominated public conversation lately, especially with Caitlyn Jenner's new show. Well, now Jazz Jennings, who's only 14 years old, is the subject of a new docuseries on TLC called I Am Jazz. The series follows her and her family as she wanders the awkward world of being a teenager, going through puberty, dating, and entering high school for the first time. It's going to be on TLC. Again, it's called I Am Jazz. So she is no stranger to cameras following her around and reporters asking her uncomfortable questions about being transgender. Barbara Walters first interviewed Jazz back in 2007 when she was only 6 years old and famously asked her, "Are you a boy or are you a girl?" Remember that? That was back in 2007. It was a year before we started doing this show with So Gay, but it was a big story at the time. So I Am Jazz, that will be debuting on TLC. I've heard good things about it. Here's hoping the content is being treated sensitively. That's what we always hope for. And that, my friends, is it. That's all we got for you on this week's show. Our huge, huge thanks to our just wonderful and legendary guest, Alina Troiano, again, better known as Carmelita Tropicana. Just someone who I could talk to for hours and hours. So we will most certainly have her back on the show. And again, if you are in Vermont, September 4th through September 6th, down there in Brattleboro, a beautiful part of the world that everybody should check out, you should go buy tickets to go see Carmelita Tropicana, vermontperformancelab.org/events. So thank you so much to you guys for listening. You get out there, go write a letter, go do whatever it is that you do to raise up the voices of your LGBT and ally brothers and sisters. You know what it is. I don't. Go with your strengths. Always go with your strengths. Let your passions fuel them. Go make a difference. And while you're out there making a difference, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?
I miss the words we used to say. I miss the sounds of yesterday. I miss the games we used to play, like Go. I was trapped inside a dream. I couldn't see her next to me. I didn't know she'd set me free, like Go. Something happens when I hold her. She keeps my heart from getting older. When the days get short and the nights get a little bit colder, we hold each other. We hold each other. We hold each other. Everything looks different now. All this time my head was down. He came along and showed me how to let go. I can't remember where I'm from. All I know is who I've become. That our love has just begun, my goal. Something happens when I hold him. He keeps my heart from getting broken. We hold each other. We hold each other. I never thought there'd be someone for me. Another soul that can share my story. Nobody loves me like you love me.
Nobody loves me like you love me.
We'll close our eyes and the walls will shatter. With open hearts we can see what matters. Nobody loves me like you love me.
Nobody loves me like you love me.
Something happens when I hold her. She keeps my heart from getting older. When the days get short and the nights get a little bit colder, we hold each other. 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 We hold each other.